Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.
Now, suddenly, we're all epidemiologists. However, while we discuss curve flattening, the virus of disinformation spreads just as quickly as COVID-19. Dr. Adam Korsharsky is an actual epidemiologist and the author of The Rules of Contagion, Why Things Spread and Why They Stop. Adam, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
Now we're all kind of trying to, I think most people understand the concept of flattening the curve so we don't overstress our health system. What happens, though, when the what has happened, say, for instance, in China, that these contagions come to an end?
What we've seen in a lot of places now is just a huge reduction in social interactions. In China, for example, in Wuhan, before those measures went in, people had about 15 social contacts on average per day, and that dropped to about 2 after the lockdown went in. And we're seeing similar patterns across Europe. So really, it's just removing most of the opportunities for the virus to spread.
But that doesn't make the virus go away, though, does it?
It doesn't. But what it does mean is that if people are infected, it's very unlikely they'll come into contact with a lot of other people. So people will be, you know, at home, and they'll ideally recover before they go to a pub or, you know, go to work and infect others.
Mm. But isn't that the stage we're in now, I suppose, and I don't know whether, not privy to that information, whether they've figured out how to do this. Do you have to do it gradually? Because in Ireland, for instance, we're all kind of told to stay home. When people are allowed to re-emerge from their homes, I assume that would have to be a gradual process, because we can't just assume, well, no one has COVID-19 anymore, we're clear, and then it's back to normal.
Exactly. Yeah. If we just switched back to normal very soon and carried on as if nothing had happened, we'd still have a lot of infection there. And it wouldn't necessarily be clear where it was. And there's quite a large risk that you'd just see the outbreak grow again. So I think we will see this kind of phasing of things gradually being lifted. And of course, you know, there's some interactions and some types of locations where you're going to see more transmission than others. So people going to a park is probably quite low risk, but having your entire country commuting to work every day and mingling in offices, that probably carries a lot more risk of transmission.
Are all pandemics the same, or are they unique?
There's a saying in my field that if you've seen one pandemic, you've seen one pandemic, because I think there's always these differences between them. I think it's important to learn the principles that are common between them, and, you know, particularly in terms of how you look at data, how you think about interactions that might be driving the outbreak. But I think we have to be prepared for surprises. You know, early on with this outbreak, we were looking to things like SARS as potential similarities, but it's clear that this is much harder to control. So I think we have to be aware that there may be some surprises along the way too.
And for you, for epidemiologists, is your job kind of as much about mathematics? Is it modelling, essentially?
It is. It's a mix of the two. I mean, I think our job is really trying to extract useful insights from quite messy, noisy data. I mean, I think during an outbreak, you never see the full picture. Everything is delayed, or it's patchy, or sometimes you get inconsistencies between data sets. And we use these different mathematical ideas to try and extract useful information. For example, if we're looking at transmission rate and people change their behavior, can we look at that change and predict what that might mean for the shape of the outbreak?
Right. Okay. And is it possible, or is it only really possible to do it afterwards, what certain behaviours meant or would have meant?
You can do some stuff at the time. For example, in England, we've looked a bit at how social behaviour has changed over the last couple of weeks, and we estimate about a 70% decline in interactions. So if you imagine transmissions drop by that amount, that means that there's fewer infections. So in the next week or two, we would expect to see a decline in cases. So you can make some of those insights in real time. But of course, one of the challenges is that, you know, countries only take one strategy and have one epidemic curve to look at. So to some extent, you know, asking those what if questions of, if we put something in earlier or done something differently, that is a hypothetical that you have to explore, but it's quite hard to actually have every possible combination in reality to look at.
Yeah, but because a few weeks ago, and it was happening in Ireland, but I think it was probably happening in most European countries, are people going, look at where Italy was, you know, 4 weeks ago, we're at exactly the same point, but you can't extrapolate out that means everyone was going to be as bad as Italy or Spain for that matter.
No, and I think it's important to look at those countries and their experiences and as a warning sign of what may happen. I mean, certainly in Italy, they became overwhelmed very quickly. But countries are different in terms of how people follow advice, you know, what might be going in. And so if, for example, you've got countries that are taking some more moderate measures and having success doing that, so, you know, we've seen some countries in Asia that haven't yet locked down, but successfully keeping transmission low, I think it's important to learn from that as well, rather than just going in with something that might be apparently effective, but we haven't actually got much evidence for.
Is culture a factor? And the reason I ask that question is that some people seem to be saying that part of the reason, at least, why Italy and Spain have been hit so hard is because families tend to live in larger groups. The elderly mix with the young. They go out more. People tend to kiss each other when they greet each other.
I think that could certainly play a role. I mean, if we look at, for example, you know, the UK, on average, people have about 5 physical contacts per day. I think in Italy, the average is 10. So these differences may well feed into that. I think there's also just the culture of how public health plays a role in a society. Places like Singapore, that kind of public mindedness about health is very high. So people, I think because of SARS and other outbreaks, are very quick to get on board with measures. Whereas for other countries, perhaps people won't take advice as quickly and won't sort of see the threat as immediately. And that will obviously affect how much transmission is going on.
Will we know we've hit the top of the curve afterwards, or will we know it at the time? Because I see Donald Trump is almost kind of implying that this week is going to be the top of the curve for the US. Can you know that in advance?
I think the challenge with outbreaks is you kind of have unreliable data quickly and reliable data further into the future. So, for example, you know, the number of cases we're seeing very much depends on how many tests are being done and how many people being detected. So it's quite hard at the time to be very confident that if you've got cases going down for a day or two, that's a genuine decline. Things like how many people are showing up in hospital and how many deaths you have is a clearer indicator of where you are in the outbreak. But of course, if someone shows up in hospital, they were probably infected maybe 3 weeks earlier. So you're really looking into the past. If you're waiting to see a decline in those kinds of data sets, it might be that actually the outbreak's been declining for a couple of weeks by the time you see a signal.
Adam, thank you very much for speaking with us today. Keep up the good work. Dr. Adam Kucharski is the author of The Rules of Contagion, Why Things Spread and Why They Stop.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With the all-new Dacia Duster. We've even impressed ourselves with this one.